Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to the second in our series of mobile computing specials here on the Serotalk Podcast Network. And today we're having a big old Serotech party. We have Mr. Mike Calvo. Hey, Mike, good to see ya.
Hey there. Where are the drinks?
I thought you were bringing those, man. What's up?
Snapple. Ricky's got Snapple.
I have Snapple.
Joe, what are you drinking, man?
I brought these finger sandwiches, you know.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Good there you deal. Go. Patrick's here, but we're not going to let him say anything, by the way. He's just going to be quiet. Oh, hi, Patrick. There you are.
I'll just hang out in the talkback room and not bother anyone.
Fair enough.
There you go.
All right. Well, today we're going to talk about all kinds of tablet-y things. We're going to talk about Nexus 7s and who knows where this is going to end up. I figure the best thing to do, because this train is liable to just run off the tracks at any moment. So, Ricky, you are now in control.
Oh, now I'm in the driver's seat. All right, yes, I give ma'am. Us about 10 seconds before we derail.
I can do that. We can just call it products that we stroke and pinch.
And welcome to an episode of End of Line. No one. Yes.
That's right.
Sorry. I'll behave, I promise. I'll try.
The last time that we did this, we had quite a lot to talk about, but even just a month later, a lot has happened in the mobile devices space. We didn't have the Microsoft Surface to talk about last time. We didn't have the iPad Mini to talk about. And we didn't have the wonderful new updates for the Nexus 7 to discuss. So things change really rapidly in this space. Now, one of us in this room has been lucky enough to get his hot little hands on a Microsoft Surface tablet. And said person is not me, so I won't be talking about this. But Mike, give us your first impressions of the Surface tablet from Microsoft.
With great anticipation, I ordered my Surface, and it arrived. The packaging was really nice. When I got it out of the box, it was actually, and I'm sorry, Microsoft, but it was very Apple-y in the way that you put like the connector onto it. It's magnetic and things like that, the plastic around the tablet. But everybody's kind of copied that from Apple, I think. I think that a lot of people have taken a line out of the Apple packaging playbook and started packaging everything, including some other peripherals I've gotten later. It was awesome. It was easy to put together. I got the cover for it, the smart cover. What is that called? The keyboard cover. And
the
I got
type
the one
cover. Right, there's the touch cover and the type cover.
No, it wasn't the touch cover, it was the type cover. And that, let me tell you, out of every single tablet that I've ever played with, that is the way, I mean, Microsoft pegged it. If they sold that as an accessory to any other tablet, it's amazing. When I turned the product on, it was very difficult to get it talking because I didn't know at what point to do my Windows key enter to bring up Narrator. That being said, I then proceeded to call Microsoft. No one at Microsoft knew how to deal with accessibility. They have no training at the time. I finally got somebody who went and said, well, let me look some stuff up on the internet. I said, well, I can do that. So out-of-box experience, while I was kind of impressed, it was not, this is not a product for the, you know, for the unfamiliar. This is not something that I would give to somebody who is not ready to be a little frustrated and argue with a little bit. That being said, overall, before people turn this off and say, he thinks it sucks and he doesn't want to deal with it at all, this is a great 1.0. So I'll continue now.
Quick question before you do that. If you didn't have the type cover in order to press Windows Enter on the keyboard, do you know if there is a touch gesture to start Narrator on the tablet?
I believe there is, Ricky, but I'm not sure what
it
was.
It's hardware. I think it's the Windows key slash the hardware key plus the volume up. But
there
I
is no
believe there is
hardware
a way.
Key. There is no hardware key.
Okay. There's not supposed to be, if I remember right, there was like a button in the up, the volume up. I'll have to look.
Yeah, there's a volume. I saw that, and I remember somebody from Microsoft told me that, and I couldn't figure it out. The tablet had no buttons on it. It was a flat piece of glass. It had a power button and the volume button. So maybe you're supposed to hold the power button and the volume button up, but
possibly.
I did my usual Windows U at the start and got the ease of access center. Right. And took it from there, and that really made it easier to log in. What I did was I just waited until the screen came up, and one of my kids told me, okay, it's saying English. And at that point, I brought up the Ease of Access Center, and it worked from there on, and I was able to set the tablet up with no assistance. So it was not bad. You know, it wasn't something that I just got frustrated and want to throw it back in the box and send it back to Microsoft.
That would be anything from Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd send it back to Amazon, not Microsoft. But
yes, it's true.
but anyway, we're recording this on a Friday, people, so it's just a fun day. You know, the thing is that this device, it's pretty. It really is a nice feeling device. It's very solid. The touch cover and the type cover was amazing, the way that it closes over the device. I found the gestures to be pretty intuitive. I did read a Microsoft article, which I tweeted a while back, about the adjustments that they made to the Narrator product for touch, and they incorporated that into RT. Now, RT is the version of Windows 8 that runs on ARM, so you cannot install your favorite programs off that you would have, for example, on x86, which is your computer. So you're kind of stuck with what Microsoft gives you and what you find in the store that may claim to be accessible or not. I, like everybody else, found the store to be very sparse. I found the store hard to navigate with Narrator. I did not find a consistent, accessible experience throughout the operating system. But again, it's a 1.0. And for a 1.0, it was pretty darn good. I was able to get around. I was able to do what I wanted to do slowly but surely and methodically. It's not something, even though Office 2013 was on there, I was not comfortable enough to be able to be productive on this device. And the lack of 3G support just made it a deal killer for me. A product that way, I'd like it to be 3G. Now, the one thing that I found very cool about it was that when I didn't know what to do with touch gestures, I could always go back to the good old standard Windows key commands that I would use on a desktop or a laptop, and that worked fantastic. So I never felt like a fish out of water. I always felt like, okay, I can always fall back to my old keyboard commands, and that worked great. So it was very cool to play with.
Let's go back to 3G for a minute, or more specifically, what is inside this tablet and what isn't? What were your feelings about the hardware of the thing? Let's just put accessibility aside for a moment and talk about the tablet itself from a consumer perspective.
Okay. The Tegra 3 processor is a quad-core processor, and it's a good one. Although I don't think that Microsoft has optimized Windows 8 well enough to run with it. I found it to be sluggish on opening programs. I found it to be sluggish on doing Narrator things from time to time. Narrator would disappear. I don't know if that was a problem with Narrator or a problem with the tablet itself, with the hardware. I found it wasn't snappy. It felt slow. The hardware itself, the body and all that stuff, is very cool. The cameras on this thing are horrendous. They stink. I mean, they barely take a good picture. It's like a 1.0 megapixel back-facing camera or something. It's horrible. I don't even know why they bothered putting that there. This is worse than a keychain camera, you know, and ouch. I don't know why Microsoft put that there. It's the truth. I mean, and Microsoft has said, you know, when you really put them against the wall, well, you know, it's kind of a reference and this and that and the other. Well, you know, you should have never done that because that reference is being sold for $629 with the keyboard. And I don't like to hear that I bought a reference. I want to buy something that I'm going to be able to use. And before we continue, that's why the thing went back to the Microsoft store. And that's a whole experience in itself, which we'll go back to in a minute about my return, which was kind of interesting.
So that's actually a very good point in terms of price. We're looking at a market that is flooded with tablets, including the Nexus that we're going to talk about in just a bit. There is the iPad Mini and of course the iPad itself. And here Microsoft is pricing this in a league that is actually more expensive than some laptops. That to me is a bit disturbing, and I don't know how Microsoft is going to fare in this market. With all that said, what did you think about the form factor of the tablet? What size is this thing, and how does it feel in your hand?
It's about the size of a sheet of paper. I mean, it's your average tablet size. I mean, it feels like it's thicker than an iPad. It felt nice in the hand. It did feel secure. Ricky, one of the reasons I think that Microsoft isn't able to lower the price is they can't make this thing a loss leader. They don't have anything else to. They don't have an ecosystem that's worth losing money on the tablet and giving people something to that they can invest money right. in later.
This is Apple not or, like the Kindle where right. Kindle's all about the content. They do sell that at a loss.
And they also, even it could be argued that even Apple doesn't make as much money as they could, but I know that they make a lot of money on their devices. But the bottom line is that the device has to have 32 gigs of storage because 12 gigs of that is taken up by the operating system and the Ouch. Stuff that comes on board, which is Microsoft. Can anyone say bloatware?
It's not uncommon. The Wii U actually has the very same problem coming out right now. If you have an 8 gig Wii U, you only have 3 gigs of saving games on it. Because 5 gigs is taken up by the OS and everything else.
Yeah, but but the Wii people don't make operating systems since 1970 something. Come on now. they could have done better on that. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not going to cut Microsoft any slack on this because they have, for whatever reason, they've done the Microsoft thing where they've sat on the sidelines and they've let everybody else do their thing, and then now they've brought us theirs, and theirs sucks. I mean, it's just the tablet. As a tablet, it's a great 1.0. It's very cool. It's a great thing to look at. Go back to the drawing board and do it again. I mean, it's not.
So with that said, do you think that things like the Lenovo Yoga and others, do you think that, because a lot of people were saying, okay, this is you killing off the OEMs. This is the death of the OEMs. Do you think that they did it really just to inspire the OEMs or that it's just good enough to kind of sort of say, this is what you can do with this platform?
I don't know. I know Matt played with a Yoga recently. And Matt said that he liked the Yoga, and the Yoga is an x86 device, so it's comparing yeah. apples to oranges because the closer competitor to this I think would be something like the Asus Vivo, I think it's called, and I saw that at the Microsoft store when I went to go return the tablet. It's pretty. It looks like a little netbook, and the way that they do it is they have this this keyboard dock that you kind of sit the tablet up on top of, and then when you're done using the tablet, you kind of sandwich the two together and they kind of click together magnetically. So it's neat, but it's plagued by some of the same problems that the Surface is, except for it has an 8-megapixel camera, so we could take some pretty good pictures with it. So, it's better, but I don't need a 10-inch camera. Camera.
Exactly.
Like that.
Right.
If I'm going to use DocuScan Plus or something, which ultimately, when the platform matures enough, we'll bring our stuff to it. But it's just not something that, for blind people right now, I feel we should invest in on the tablet side. That being said, I think Narrator, when it matures, is going to be a great alternative to any screen reader, including ours at Cerotech. Including NVDA, I think it's going to give us a great opportunity to have a screen reader wherever we go. And as I've stated before, the screen reader will ultimately die because you're going to have a level of accessibility in the platform that none of us are going to be able to create a financial case for to be able to say, it's worth you paying me X amount of dollars because we do this and this and this so much better than they do. Ultimately, they're going to do it all as good. And because of sandboxing and things of that nature, I think the operating systems are going to definitely make that the way it is, So
you did feel like this was a durable unit, because there was that whole skateboarding video and you know, where they put the wheels on the surface and they said, you could use it like a skateboard and all of that.
Yeah, so it was cool with the Gorilla Glass and all. It was a nice, I mean, it's a nice piece of metal, dude. It really is a nice piece of hardware. It's just, unfortunately, the insides of that hardware don't live up to what it looks like.
Yeah.
So you took this thing back, actually, but you're by no means giving up on Windows 8 in general, or even the Explore by Touch, or whatever the interface is going to be called in Windows 8. You're actually using this on your production machine, and you've got a little device that you can explore the desktop by touch, right?
I do. I think that Microsoft will ultimately do it right. I just don't know. In the past, Microsoft has been able to get forgiveness from the consumer because they've been the only game in town. I don't know if that's going to be the case anymore. We're living in a generation of people that they do everything, or not everything, because people are going to say, you're so dogmatic. A lot of people do most things in the browser. So as long as you have a browser, as long as you have some apps, I think that Microsoft better do something very quickly to make the operating system do what people need it to do, and not think that this isn't 1998 or 2002 or 2004 anymore, where you can say, well, we'll fix it in 6 months or we'll fix it in a year. Because if they do, people are going to move over to other platforms. And you see that where even you're starting to see ARM processors come into even laptops and things like that they're talking about. So, you know, the day I think of Microsoft's stranglehold on the operating system world is over, or it's beginning to be over. I mean, obviously, they still have a huge market share. But I love the Explore by Touch stuff, or whatever they want to call it. I think it's neat. I have yet to figure out how to turn it on in the operating system right off the bat with Narrator. That being said, I just got the thing yesterday in the afternoon and played with it for about an hour and a half, and then had to go. I'm playing Mr. Mom this week, so I had to go do things with the kids. But I'm going to get back to it, and by the time this hits, I'll probably have some more to say in the comments and the show notes and that kind of thing.
What is this device called, by the way? And are there multiple types of these? I like to compare this to a Magic Trackpad on the Macs, where you don't have a built-in trackpad. So I guess these are the equivalent for Windows. Which one did you get, and are there lots of them to choose from?
I found one from Logitech, and I don't remember because it doesn't have a sexy Logitech-y name. It's got like numbers and that kind of thing. And I didn't do my homework last night, teacher. So I didn't bring the numbers in with me, but it'll be in the show notes again. It is a Logitech unit. It was $79, so it was a little rich. But like the Tragic MacPad, it was, which I love my Tragic MacPad. I just like calling it the Tragic MacPad.
Yes.
But
that's about $69, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about the same. Yeah. And yeah, okay. The thing I think is going to be very cool about it is once touch matures, you're going to be able to walk up to a device, to a computer, as a blind person, plug this thing in, and just use it without having to use the keyboard, pretty much just to get around and all that stuff, which is kind of neat. I mean, if it's not
absolutely
there, you know, you can have it in your backpack or whatever. So I love the idea. I really think that it's got to have time to mature. And Joe, you said it a million times that Microsoft is in this for the long haul. And I got to agree with you there. Just in looking at it, if this is all you've got, Microsoft, there's a problem. Now, we've got some interesting wrinkles, of course. Steve Sanofsky leaving.
That's a few less fired. 100-word blog posts.
And you're being kind.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've got a feeling that one of the things that I've gleaned from talking to Microsoft people and just our relationship with Microsoft is the Windows team kind of worked in a vacuum and said, we'll give you what we give you when we give you what we give you. And we saw that in many ways as an AT company, because we didn't get things until basically the tech people did, you know, the TechNet people or whatever. And usually AT companies are ahead of the game. We would get private showings. We would get, you know, we would get pre-release software that we could start working with. And we had to scramble, as I'm sure Freedom Scientific and GW Micro did as well. Hence, I'm sure GW Micro's frustration with Windows 8. I mean, I hope that Steve leaving and this new lady, Judy, I think her name is, or Judy or Julie.
Julie.
I think it's Judy.
Julie Green.
Yeah, I think that I hope that she learns to reach out a little bit more to other groups in Microsoft, especially the accessibility area, and say, what can we do? You know, how can we work together instead of this is what we've been thinking? And we saw that in Narrator, where they did Narrator the way they thought, and then they threw it out to the consumer, and then they had to go back to the drawing board for a few months and rework it. And that's that article that I posted. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting next couple of years. I think that it's going to take them at least one more revision of Windows to get this thing right.
Do you think the need for everybody to copy Apple with secrecy is kind of what also caused this? Because it seems like everybody wants to have their big surprise, or everybody wants to have their big moment, or, you know, let's hold the press off and not have all these things leak out because we make much more of a dramatic splash if all this comes out at one time or is discoverable by the user. And to me, it seems like I almost like the Google approach because, you know, here it all is. We're warning you, it's going to be up in a couple of days, go get it, but here it all is. And what we have now is Microsoft trying to emulate Apple, which I don't think works very well.
Well, I think we've got Apple trying to emulate Steve. And that was evident at the last Apple event where I felt you know, Steve is the only one that I saw that could pull off that magical and amazing and, you know, all these strong words with exclamation marks. When I see Tim Cook do it, when I see the other members of the team do it, I just feel like they're patronizing me. I feel like they're being sarcastic. Just nobody did it like Steve did. Steve was probably personally a very unlikable person from what I understand, but Steve had that whole charismatic, this is cool and you want it because I made it vibe. And I think Apple's trying to find its foothold. So everybody trying to copy, they're trying to copy Steve Jobs. And Steve Jobs, may rest in peace, is no longer with us. And his legacy is what it is. I think that the secrecy thing, it's stupid because then you turn around and you see where Microsoft themselves kind of seeded some secrets out. There was a whole thing about there was people suspecting that they were kind of feeding the rumor mill themselves. So it's like, come on, guys, you know, either be for real or don't, you know, either be secretive and just be arrogant like Apple was, you know, because we're on the ear of a new Apple, which is a lot more friendly, blah, 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 or feed the rumor mill, you know. So, no, I don't think that the secrecy thing is working for Microsoft. But then again, I think Microsoft, as the old dog that it is trying to find out what works. It's trying to be a hipster, you know. It's trying to be young and hip and whatever, you know.
Yeah, I feel like Microsoft is trying to use slang terms that it thinks the young people use. That's right. And it's, you feel a little embarrassed for them.
You kids want to hit this tablet, don't you?
It's quite slamming.
Right.
It's what all the good kids do. Oh,
it's quite
yes.
Slamming. It's great. It's really, mm-hmm. really groovy.
Yeah, that's how I'm looking at Microsoft right now. And they'll eventually get it right with some middle ground, but it's not happening yet. So Microsoft's not the only game in town, though. There's Google, of course, and Google's been doing a lot with Android. Some say Google's playing catch-up to Apple and adding these new features and those new features. And some say Apple's playing catch up to Google because they just added this and we've had it in Android for 17 years, even though the operating system hasn't been out that long. But there are a lot of good things to say about Android in general, and very slowly but surely, the accessibility is improving on Android. We all have Nexies and just received the 4.2 Jelly Bean update. One of the biggest improvements here is that now there is a gesture to turn TalkBack on if it has been turned off previously. You do have to enable the gesture. Once that happens, though, if you turn TalkBack off and hand the device to somebody, you'll be able to turn it back on when they hand it back to you. This isn't a toggle, though. You can't do this gesture to turn it off and then turn it back on. That's a nice improvement. And there's also some low vision stuff that just made it into the 4.2 update. So they're sort of thinking about accessibility. They're putting their toe in the water. What do you think, Joe? Have you had a chance to look at the low vision aspects of 4.2 yet?
Yeah, Byron Lee and I actually will have some of this conversation happening on this month's That Android Show, which will be all about the Nexi. 7 and how we feel about it. The thing that they have done with magnification is that you can actually use a triple tap to be able to bring up the magnification and use gestures and then lift your finger to remove it. So you have the ability to kind of sort of drop in and drop out, and that's kind of helpful. There's also pinch to zoom on Google Mail, which is, you know, Gmail in version 4.2, which is really good. You've always had the ability to do certain things like, you know, change colors and things like that. The part that kind of gets me is that, being a longtime Android user, menus have been very consistent in that you've had white on a black background or yellow on a black background for menus until Jelly Bean. Jelly Bean, you can actually be in these menus and then go to another menu like in Google Now or something, and it's very much black text on a white background. So if you suffer from glare issues, that might throw you, and you might have to play with the brightness settings on the Nexus. Because there's no real way other than using some type of color filter to be able to kind of make that a little less jarring. But minor inconsistencies in menus aside, I adore my Nexus 7. I love Google Now. Google Now is kind of like Siri, but it's really more of a search. And if you allow yourself to be tracked by Google, for good or bad, there are certain things that it will pay attention to. Because the Nexus 7 has a GPS, it actually can see certain things when you're traveling. Now, I went over to my parents' house not too long ago. My wife and I went over there for Halloween. And because I had actually been back and forth to the same place a couple of times, it assumed my parents' house was my workplace. So we were handing out candy, and I'd get a little note from my Nexus saying, if you leave now, your commute home will be 8 minutes. And that can tie into public transportation.
If that happens when you're near a strip club?
Well, you can, your commute home,
you might want to leave now. Do you want to stop?
It's not me, honey, really. It's a mistake in the software.
But if I was still traveling back and forth to my old office in Austin, because I would take a bus every day, it would learn the route. It would learn that it was the number one, and it would tell me when the next number one was scheduled to be there. And if not, it would tell me about the traffic and all of that. And if I had an appointment, if I give myself an event, because you can tap it and tell it an event, it will then look at the traffic data of where that is. If you give it the address and say, look, traffic's really bad today. If you don't leave in 15 minutes, you're not going to be in time for this event. And for the most part, TalkBack reads a lot of that stuff. It doesn't read some things in searches, where Siri will read web searches a little better. But for the most part, if I want to tell it, you know, where is Cloud Atlas? You know, where can I see Cloud Atlas? It looks at my location and gives it to me within the area that I'm in. Or if I've gone to certain movie theaters over and over again and I've checked in, it pays attention to all of that. So that's really the biggest feature that I miss when I have to use my Droid 4, which is Ice Cream Sandwich, is I miss not having Google Now. And it's the first time I think ever since we've been doing Android shows for more than 2 years, I think it's the first time ever I've ever felt like, oh my God, I have to be on the latest version. This phone is a brick now because I don't have these features that are happening in Jelly Bean.
So that's interesting because now is where, interestingly enough, Joe, the fragmentation monster rears its head, you know.
Sure, sure.
Because you say, wow, you know, I want these features on my tablet. So how does that make you feel as a consumer? You know, and that's rhetorical.
Sure. But I would turn around and say iOS 6 features are messed up on the 4 anyway. So if you're an iPhone 4, you don't get everything that 4S or even 5 owners get. And, you know, you pays your money, you takes your chance with the phones that were available at the time.
It's just not as bad, I think, as in the Google world.
The upside is that if I really, really, really wanted to, and I didn't want to violate my handset replacement policy yet, I could CyanogenMod mod or do any other mod, and I could take the Droid 4 to Jelly Bean if I really wanted to. I don't, because I'm happy with it being what it is. But this was kind of the first real-time, real feature that kind of sort of made me go, oh, wow. Now, my wife, you know, all of our tablets here are Wi-Fis. And my wife said, you know, this would mean so much more to me if the 3G. Nexus had a 3G or, yep, you know, LTE connection. And for us as a family, it was the first time it really kicked in that this 7-inch tablet really could do a lot more if we weren't pairing it to one of our phones. And so we had never really needed that either.
It's funny that you mention the 3G issue, because for me, I got this tablet and I knew that it was a Wi-Fi tablet and knew that I wouldn't be able to have access to look up things on the web as I was driving around and that kind of thing. But I never considered the fact that there was also GPS in it. This is a $199 device, and you don't have to pay for a data connection in order to get GPS. And this is the first time I've ever experienced that, so I was really cool with it. I don't necessarily think it has to have 3G or LTE. I have my phone for that if I need to look up something, but the fact that it's got GPS is really nice, especially in this price point.
Ricky, I certainly hope that you're not contributing to the problem of blind people driving on the road and texting and looking up things on the internet all at the same time. I mean, it's just wrong. You've got to stop that.
I do that all the time.
You've got to stop that, Ricky. It's just wrong. The rest of us are very much in danger because of blind people like you.
No, actually, she's using a Google driverless car, an autonomous vehicle, as we speak.
Oh, there you
That's
go.
That's another podcast. That
we'll and going to Taco into. Bell.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely.
How do you like the typing on this thing, Joe? Because that's the only thing that I'm frustrated about the Nexus is the typing. It does. I'm one of those touchy double tap people.
I've not used the new swipey gestures in 4.2 yet. I'm a muscle memory typist, and holding it and using thumb typing, because I can't use the split typing on the iPad. It just I appreciate that people can, but the way that my hands are positioned on it, I'm okay. I can actually thumb type with this device. Where I got thrown is in Jelly Bean, when you get to passwords, unless you have headphones, you get star, 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 star if it's coming out of the speakers. And I wasn't kind of sort of used to that because I'm used to typing on my iPad. I also, where I miss it and where I think Apple gets it right is the phonetics and that B, Bravo, C, Charlie.
Yeah.
Sometimes if I didn't hear it right, I sometimes leave my finger on that key to be able to get that secondary sound. And I don't have that on the Nexus. I have to remind myself, oh yeah, I just need to move my finger.
I want double tap. I want double tap typing. And that, because every time I have to enter a password, it creates a frustration for me.
Possibly when Flexi comes to the Android platform, you might like that.
Yeah, yes, indeed.
Bring Flexi to the platform, please.
Typing was one of my biggest complaints when I first got the device. And for any of you who have Nexis or are getting them now, you do want to upgrade to 4.2 immediately, because not only for the great new features in the OS itself, but there is a much newer version of TalkBack that is going to be on these devices that isn't there on 4.1 and cannot be updated through the Google Play Store. So with that preface, when I first got the device, I was having the hardest time using thumb typing, and I would position my finger over a letter. It would announce the letter. I would lift my finger and nothing happened. The letter didn't get entered because TalkBack was being kind of aggressive about announcing a letter, even if my finger wasn't correctly positioned there to enter it. Once my version of TalkBack was upgraded, I no longer had that problem, so that frustration has disappeared for me. Yay!
And the Nexus doesn't have a sensitive touchscreen as, say, the Galaxy S3. I can't use my wife's Galaxy S3 all that well because it is ridiculously crazy aware of wherever you put your finger on that screen, and it drives me insane. Whereas sometimes I have to double select something, maybe back. TalkBack said I was on back, but it didn't select back. So right. Once or twice I've had that, but it's not horrible. The good news is that if you share your devices in a family, you now have the ability to have separate logins. So my wife could have her Gmail and her account going, and I can have my account, and TalkBack will actually talk in the lock screen. And I've got to experiment more with this, but if it is working the way I think it's working, she can log in as herself and TalkBack will stop talking. And if I log in as myself, then my save state profile should be there and TalkBack will come up.
That's cool.
If you do upgrade, you have the ability to have TalkBack talk And then it goes through its update. And then when it comes back, it will tell you that it's back. So you'll hear speech. You don't have any prompts or anything you have to walk yourself through. So that's really good. And in the same way that iOS, it acts very similarly, where you know you've done it correctly when your iDevice comes back and starts speaking to you.
I don't use my Nexus 7 all the time, but I'm using it more and more, and I'm glad to see more and more improvements happening. I still stand by my feeling. I know, Joe, that you use this quite a bit more than I do, and Mike will get your thoughts in just a second. For me, the Nexus is a great investment right now, and I expect to continue to see improvements such that I will be able to use this a lot more productively as a couple of things change. So I don't regret the purchase of it at all. Mike, how about you?
I don't regret the purchase either. I've moved a far cry from the point where I told you guys if I ever decide to buy another Google product, you know, I'll pay for one of you to get on a plane and come down here and slap me. So, I mean, I've gone in the opposite direction. I actually believe that once TV Raman was removed from that team, in his leadership position, everything went in a different direction. And I have not seen that publicly stated. I will be the bad guy on the podcast and say when TV was removed from his position and Google started listening to people, a lot more happened. A lot better things happened. And I am much more hopeful. I look at all the products we're talking about today. And to us as blind people, I know accessibility devices and products are like a religion sometimes, but they're not. And I love the idea that we have choice. I don't use my Nexus 7 as much as probably you or Joe do, just because I'm so into the Apple ecosystem on my phone and all that stuff and on my Mac and all the good stuff that I do here. But that doesn't mean that I don't respect the platform, that I don't applaud it. And I have great hopes for it. I think that we as a community need to advocate for it. What I'm very concerned about is a little bit of fragmentation in our community. I'm afraid that we have a small community as it is. So if we have the basic 80-20 rule where 20% of the people do 80% of the work, that's not going to cut it for us. This is something that if we as a community really believe in accessibility and really want to move into the mainstream and be looked at as mainstream people, this has got to be a lot more than 20% of our community advocating to all these companies. But I'll tell you, I really like the Nexus. I love the form factor. I don't feel that it's cheaply made. I thought that was a bad shot from Apple to the Nexus people. I think that Apple's attitude towards other tablets at this particular time is just stupid. You guys are on top. You know, have some respect for yourselves.
Yeah, you know, weird that they gave so much of that keynote to comparing themselves to the Nexus. You know, it's the Microsoft way of, if I acknowledge you, then you're my competition. You know, yeah. Microsoft just chose never to acknowledge Apple for the longest time, and it felt so counterproductive for Apple to turn around and just pick on the Nexus.
Yeah. Pick on everybody, actually. They're just, you know,
yeah,
and they pick on everybody.
But I do, from my standpoint, I mean, all the same media apps are on my Nexus that are on the iOS devices. You know, the ecosystems are pretty much in parallel now. There are just as many apps over there as there are over here. And I still use my, you know, iPad to watch Netflix. You know, I still like the speakers on my iPad a little better than the speakers on the Nexus. That's not to say that they're not good.
I like reading books on Google. Much better than everybody else.
That is awesome. I really like it as well.
iBooks is okay. I've just never been able to get my head into iBooks. But I tell you that the Google Books and the magazines.
And the magazines.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff. Really good stuff. And by the way, before anybody listens, says, well, I'm blind and I'm on this kind of, you know, income and I can't afford that. It's $200, people. You know, this thing is a really cool device, and for less than a Victor Stream or any other such device, you're going to get some really cool stuff that is going to allow you to read books and is a growing ecosystem.
I love reading. Updates.
Yeah, it does.
Because it's a reference tablet. It's going to get the updates for quite some time.
What does that mean, Joe? Because maybe people that are listening don't really know what that means.
So because phone carriers are so picky about how they like phones on their network for security and other reasons, you can have a problem where the carriers and the handset makers who sell you these phones, Samsung, HTC, others, it might not be in their best interest to roll out the latest and greatest version of the Android operating system across the carrier lines, especially if you're someone like HTC who really needs you to buy the next phone. Like Windows, what can happen is that people won't necessarily pay attention or even care about having the latest and greatest in Windows or in Android. So Windows 8, some people may never ever buy a Windows 8 upgrade. But their next computer that they buy might just so happen to have Windows 8 on it because that's what was being shipped at the time. The same thing can happen in Android. 54% at the time of this recording are still on Gingerbread and can access almost all of the App Store and aren't locked out by a lot of things. Certainly, they're not getting like Google Now or some of these great features that we've talked about. But when you move to the tablet situation, you have a wider ability to have these updates. The Motorola Zoom, which was one of the first tablets, got updates, golly, for almost 2.5 years. They just recently couldn't get 4.2. It was said that there was no support in 4.2 for the Motorola Zoom, but they're on 4.12, and that's not a horrible thing. Where it affects us, of course, is accessibility. If they improve TalkBack or if they add some features to something, then you're not able to get the latest accessibility improvements because your device won't be able to be upgraded. Now, that's also true in the iOS world because my iPad 1 is, you know, stuck back on version 5.1, and that device is not even 3 years old yet. So the whole idea is to get you to buy the biggest, the best, and the greatest and built in obsolescence. But in the situation here lately where people ask me, should I buy an Android or iOS, I still feel very strongly that if you're totally blind and you really need a phone to be a phone, then you're okay on either side of this. But if you want the ability for your phone to be a tricorder, to do all these amazing apps, to have all this amazing stuff, the iPhone's a better situation for you. Plus, if you're going to lock yourself into a 2-year contract of any kind of situation, you probably want to have some stability, and iOS does that. But you can enter in on the Nexus and start to learn Android, as you said, at a very affordable price, and know that you're going to be getting the latest and the greatest updates to be able exactly. to learn about that ecosystem. And so you've got a very cheap, affordable, non-contract way of getting to learn Android.
And because it's a reference tablet, meaning that Google has said, this is what you can do. We want to make a tablet that shows off what this platform can do or can be. And the other manufacturers can reference this as they build their own tablets. Because the Nexus is a reference tablet, all of the good things that Google is doing are going to come to this tablet rather than if you're buying something like an Asus tablet or there are any number of other Android tablet manufacturers, they may have their own ideas about what a tablet should be, and you may get Android updates a little more slowly there than you would getting it right from Google themselves.
Or bloatware. If you buy a Samsung Galaxy Tab, your experience might be a little different because Samsung has a tendency, good or bad, to modify a lot of their Android devices with TouchWiz, which is their mod, their skin for Android. And, you know, some people enjoy that. It's not, actually, it's a little accessibility friendly, believe it or not. On my wife's Galaxy S3, there's some things about TouchWiz that TalkBack will say that actually don't say in my Motorola Droid 4. So there's some up and downs on that too.
So one of the things that I'm finding is that sighted people can move from device to device, and basically they can pinch and touch and swipe and tickle and do whatever it is that they got to do. So they don't have to deal with, you know, commands for TalkBack versus commands for Narrator versus commands for iOS devices versus commands for Lion, all of that stuff. And what they're doing on the sighted community is they're kind of standardizing all these platforms to be touchy, tickly, pinchy, zoomy things. And what I would like to propose, at least in theory, is that we find a standard for touch interfaces for blind people. I think that Apple has actually done it right. I don't know why that is. I have not found any compelling stuff. I found a couple of gestures on the Nexus that I really like in TalkBack. But I find some of them very complicated to remember, because they do stuff where you can fight, you know, swipe up with your fingers and then to the right, and then swipe up with your fingers to the left and then down to the left. You know, just weird shapes that you do on your screen that sometimes work and sometimes don't. But I'd like to, how do you guys feel about a standardized kind of interface that screen readers that are on these platforms, whether they be OS based or not, you know, whether they be from the manufacturer, say an Android or an iOS or an Apple for iOS, or maybe even these guys from Spiel would use, or a third party would use, when building a screen reader for Windows, a Windows 8. What do you think about that? Do you think that with all the patent garbage that's going on, do you think that any of these guys have had the audacity to pull what one of our market leaders did recently, where they tried to basically patent things that were basic fundamentals in the use of a screen reader for blind people, and that stuff got turned over in a court? How do you think that that's going to play out? Because this seems to be a very important thing for us to be able to use multiple devices.
I think that it would make for a lot easier device transitions if there were some things that were standardized. And we already see that to some degree in that you can double tap in both Android and iOS, and probably in Narrator as well. Flicking has made it to at least two out of these three platforms. There are going to be some things that may be handled differently, just because I don't know that everybody's going to want to, say, implement a rotor gesture where you can then change between characters and words and headings and lines and blah, blah, blah. And for Android, you can't really read by anything but characters and words and paragraphs. So there's a lot of that stuff that just hasn't made it into the accessibility framework yet, for whatever reason. But in general, yeah, I like the tapping, flicking. I'd love to have double tap to, you know, pause speech everywhere, or give me some gesture on my Nexus tablet that I can easily stop speech. So to figure out what those basics are.
you were right there. I do miss the proximity sensor on my phone for that. Yeah.
I just wish that, because as, and this interests me as a manufacturer of a screen reader, because you could inadvertently trample on somebody's intellectual property because they've got it applied to something else. You know, the way that, it's a swipe to lock. But that kind of crap scares me, because we're a little company, you know, and for us to start implementing some standard across the board, and then have one of these guys come back and say, well, you're not doing it the way that we want you to do it on this platform for blind people or whatever. That scares me, and that concerns me, and I really think that somebody needs to explore what intellectual property has been placed on accessibility stuff that is available in our community.
It's a situation where some people in the Android community didn't like that Android was adopting a more voiceover-like gesture and style. There were some people in the community who had been there since 1.6 who really disagreed with this. And, you know, part of the reason why it was adopted was to make a transition, or for someone to go from one platform to another to have some similarity within reason. Look at what's happening with Microsoft and the Tiles versus iOS. You know, iOS has a lock right now on a grid of icons. That's come out in a lawsuit. That's existed, same way that Slide Unlock had to be modified. Microsoft's answer to that, because we learned during the Apple Samsung trial, was that Microsoft and Apple have a gentleman's agreement not to copy each other. That's how Live Tiles really got into its own, was that they did these rows of rectangles and squares that are familiar to someone who still can use touch, but don't look like Apple's grid of icons. Accessibility-wise, that really affects us. But because these companies can't say that this can look like this because this is part of my visual style, then we got affected.
Yeah, it's just something that I think we need to address as a community. And when I say we need to address as a community, I'm not saying NFB or ACB step up and do it for us. I'm saying we really need to address this as a community. We have the opportunity, people, to have open dialogues on social networks without either one of these two organizations putting their noses into, you know, into what we, I mean, if they want to participate, hallelujah, you should. You know, but I don't want any one of these community, one of these organizations thinking that it's my voice when I have the ability to go out and openly have a dialogue on a social network with a group of very well-thinking, you know, very good-thinking blind people that are intelligent, that have the ability to speak for themselves.
And with that said, with Android, you could create an OS screen reader that could act a lot like VO in a lot of characteristics. As you know, the within reason, I think, because I'm not sure if some of that belongs specifically, because like you said, some of those things are, you know, for mobiles especially, locked down in certain ways through the legal system. And so there's always been that concern. We've talked about that on other SBN shows about how I don't think we'll ever see perfect parity because we don't know just exactly who has what and where and why X, Y, and Z can't happen. I'm thinking a lot of the pinch to zoom and touch to zoom and tap to zoom features that I got really upset about over the Samsung trial. Was, you know, that directly affected me as a low vision user. And I don't see it as a feature of the OS. I see it as a matter of being able to see the screen. So exactly. Wait a minute, that's a bit of a problem. Whereas, you know, in this situation, and you're seeing this with Android, triple tap for magnification. That, in a way, is an engineering way around what Apple already has.
Yeah. So again, I just wanted to bring that up and kind of put that out there for some open debate, and when people feedback on the podcast and say, you know, what do you think about this, people? What do the Pratik Patels of the community, for example, and others that are really into these types of things with accessibility and they have strong opinions on this, what do you guys think of this? You know, I want to invite an open dialogue on this kind of stuff.
Resources at serotalk.com or leave us an iReport right there in iBlink Radio.
All right, so we've danced around this for this entire podcast, but we haven't really talked about the elephant in the room. Actually, it's a little tinier than an elephant. The mini elephant?
Yeah, mini elephant.
You know, let's talk about the iPad.
Better than a maxifant?
A maxifant. I'm going to tell you, in a word, on the iPad mini, hated it. No, not true. I actually
that's hyphenated, right?
Yeah, I love the form factor, but that's about where my love for the thing starts. It starts and ends. That's the only thing I like about it is the form factor. Aside from that, I think it's, you know, wait for version 2.0, people.
Agreed.
No Retina display, really? Get out of here.
Yeah, no Retina display. The thing's priced at $329, which is, I mean, I don't know about this price point. You could easily upgrade to the full-size iPad for a bit more, or you could have an iPod Touch at this size, or you can get a $199 tablet that's in this same form factor. I really feel like Apple chose to compete in an area where it didn't need to. Apple didn't need to do anything. They're on top. You know, they've got the smaller devices like the phones and the iPods and the Nanos and such, and they have the larger iPad device, they had no need to make a 7-inch tablet. Why not let these other guys have that portion of the market? I just feel like Apple added one thing too many, and my opinion perhaps doesn't matter that much because these things are selling.
Yeah, walk into the store and try and buy one, right? We had that discussion offline, and that was like, yeah, well, and you and I agree, Ricky, on these things, but it's like, walk into the store and try and buy one, you know? But that's just sheeple mentality. I mean, that's unfortunate, but, you know, a lot of Apple people are sheeple. And that may be a smack in the head to some Apple people, but that's what we're here to do. Is we're here to kind of tick you off sometimes, and get the hate mail.
That's right.
But that means you're listening. But we love you anyway. So we just say these things just to get you all ticked off. So if you jump and do it, you're being more sheepalistic. But anyway, but the whole idea is that, I mean, what Apple, I wonder really if this was something that Steve Jobs had in the making, or if this was something that was done post Jobs, that they're, again, it's just that they're so concerned, they feel that their position is so tenuous, you know, and so precarious, that they've got to go out and they've got to be able, for they've got to have a tat for your tit every single time. Boy, is that a name for a...
well, like I told you offline, I feel like they weren't sure. So that's why they Frankensteined all these leftover parts in bins at Foxconn, and they didn't know if this was going to sell
iPad
or not.
That did that. That's the new iPad.
That's horrible
too. what was it? You called it the limited edition. That was great.
Yes, Joe. The limited edition third gen iPad. Correct. Only on sale for 7 months.
It wasn't third generation. They didn't call it third generation. It was
the new iPad.
Yes, but I've seen
that was never going to confuse anybody when they released another one.
In PostScript, and I still stand by my comment that they knew it all along. They had the plan.
They were letting marketing drive the development of that thing. Marketing said it's got to be out in March because that's the Apple way, and blah blah blah. So they put all the parts together and they put it out knowing darn well that they were going to be putting this one out with this new plug and everything else and the faster processor and everything. And then they were going to patronize us all by saying, well, we reserve the right, you know, that if you didn't buy it within 30 days from now, we don't have to upgrade it because, you know, we could do these things. And okay, but you know, now they've changed, they're changing everything. They're upgrading phones every 6 months now from what I hear too.
There's a rumor that that's going to happen, that 5S could be around the corner. And again, it doesn't feel right for Apple to be on defense. It always feels better for Apple to ignore everybody, talk their game, play to their boutique mentality, make you aspire to these devices. You feel good about yourself when you buy these devices. And it plays right into that. But doing this mini at this time with these specs feels like we're going to dip a toe in the water and see if this thing sells. And if it does sell, just like the first iPad, because we weren't even sure about that, if this thing really takes off, then the next one's going to be awesome. Just wait. And what I mean by we're not sure, the iPad 1 had a keyboard dock because they weren't completely sure that people would be able to handle the touch interface. The iPad mini is just such a compromised device to me. It's an iPad 2, just shrunk down. And, you know, it is 80% of the size of the original iPad. And I don't know that that is what I need it to be. Now, if you've got $1,000 in iTunes or iTunes apps, then yeah, this is a no-brainer. You're in the Roach Motel. You can never get out because ecosystem is there.
Yeah, and see, that's where I feel like a lot of this is coming from. Apple knows that it has people in its ecosystem, and you credit them with a lot of uncertainty. I feel like it's greed. I feel like they're saying, ha, we got all these people buying our stuff. We can do whatever we want, and nobody's going to touch us. Somebody's going to go out and buy this stuff, even if we release something that is substandard. We don't have to play to the same standards as we used to because we're on top now. We can do what we want.
Well, Apple's gone, in my opinion, from escort to street whore. I mean, that is just truly that is just exactly what they've done. Before it was, you can have some of this if you can pay me by the hour and you can, you know, whatever, and you can take me on nice dates and all this, like a nice high-priced escort. But now We'll put one at every price for you. What do you want? You want around the world for $329? What do you know, please, Apple, bring your class back when it comes to that. And by the way, I want to say for everybody on this panel, and I think I speak for all of us, as blind people, we are very, very, very thankful for what Apple has done for our community as far as accessibility. This does not take away from the leaps and bounds that Apple has made ahead of everyone in this industry in accessibility on all of its products. So one thing has nothing to do with the other. I'm bitching as a consumer. I'm not bitching as a blind person. As a blind person, I am very thankful and I'm the first one out ready to buy a new product when Apple puts it out. I did not buy the iPad mini, though, because I refuse to buy a substandard product that I know come March or whatever is going to probably have a Retina display or whatever. And that's when they're going to gloat going, hey, look at all the people that bought the other one. Now they're going to have to upgrade. And as Ricky said, we can sell them this stuff and they'll buy it. And I won't buy it. We won't buy it.
The minute I was convinced of this was your demonstration to me of your iPhone 5 with Siri in Spanish. And as fast as that iPhone 5 chip moved and as quick as Siri was working on your phone, I thought, wow, that ASICs processor is a heck of a deal. And the fact that they're using smaller, lighter, not as fast chips in the iPad mini really sold that home to me, because we're back to what you just asked me about Android not too long ago. There are some physical cliffs in the Apple ecosystem. I always get on the Android show a lot of fragmentation. No, there is way as much fragmentation right now in the iDevice world. All you have to do is go and watch your updates to see how many people are still updating their apps to fit on the iPhone 5 and all the other, you know, we've made iOS 6 tweaks and stuff like that. There are lots of abandoned apps in the Apple ecosystem. There's a lot of abandonware. And all you need to do is go back and see when that, this was compatible with iOS 3.02 and up.
Yeah.
Oh, you haven't touched this app in a while. So,
I think that we can agree from this, just listening to everything, that every single one of these ecosystems is plagued with something.
Yeah.
There's no perfect one. Yeah,
fragmentation is a way of life.
Yeah. Even fragmentation, no matter what operating system, what manufacturer, what company you're talking about, each one of them have their problems. And of course, as journalists and as trying to make for entertainment, we of course sit here and, you know, and point out the good, the bad, and the ugly to make for good communication. But that's a cool thing. I think that as blind people, we can jump on any one of these platforms now and really kind of put our stake in the ground and say, okay, I'm going to make this my mission. I'm going to get a Surface, and I'm going to really badger Microsoft to make it better. You know, I'm going to get a Nexus, and I'm really going to advocate on the forums with Google, you know, and make it and do my best to make it better and give concise reports, which they're listening to now. I'm going to really do my best to work within Apple's ecosystem and you know, and their infrastructure for support and all that, to get them to change this or to change that or to do whatever. I mean, I think it's a great opportunity, again, to call our community to do something, to make sure that its voice is heard. And that we continue to not just embrace one. This is not just, we're not, as blind people, we don't just embrace Apple. We shouldn't just embrace Android. We shouldn't just embrace Microsoft. We should be as diverse as the mainstream is and say, you know what? I want to be able to use that device. So I'm going to advocate for it because I like everything else Microsoft does, or I like everything else that Apple does, or I like everything else that Google does. So I want to be able to, I don't want to have to use an Android tablet if I like all the stuff that Microsoft does. I want to use a Microsoft one. So I want to encourage everybody to continue that.
And go beat up Amazon because they're not playing fair.
That's right.
Screw Amazon. You know, I mean, who cares?
Hey, we have a podcast, you know, title.
That's right.
I mean, we. You know what? There was a time where that would matter to me. There was a time where that would make me angry, you know, and bother me. But at this point, people, there are so many options to do everything. You know, I've said it before, the one thing that holds all these platforms together and makes them all interchangeable are the apps on them. You know, and if Amazon wants to say, we don't want you on our product, that's okay. There's nothing on Amazon that I can't get somewhere else, you know, some way, somehow. A Kindle book, you know, I can do it on the Kindle keyboard, not as well, maybe. But you know what? I have high hopes for Google Books. You know, Google Books is very accessible. iBooks is very accessible. So sooner or later, you know, these systems are going to grow. And Amazon, you're going to lose our consumer dollars. That's it. It may not matter. And I'm very surprised that it doesn't matter to a company that has been so consumer-oriented and customer-oriented in every other aspect except for accessibility on these devices. That's a total disconnect. I don't understand that. But who cares? Screw them. You know, when they get in the game, we'll buy their product. It's kind of the same way I feel about Windows Phone 8. Oh, did I say that? but, you know, it's the same thing I feel about that. You know, we'll buy Windows Phone 8 devices when they're accessible. You know, if they don't ever get to be, well, there's plenty of other options out there. Plenty of fish in the sea, people.
That's right. I think you've made some very good points, and I'm going to bring this to a close by asking each of us to provide some final thoughts about mobile accessibility this month. For me, I want to go back to your point about working as a community to improve the access to all of these platforms, Apple, Surface, Windows 8, Android, what have you. While as consumers, we want these things to just work, and we don't necessarily want to spend the entirety of our lives submitting bug reports and that kind of thing, I do think that we have a responsibility to, as we're using these devices and as we're finding things that we wish would work better, our wishing isn't going to make it happen. We have to be in dialogue with the people who can assist in changing things to be as we want them to be. So don't forget that you have a voice, and I think we all have a responsibility to use that voice at least some of the time in order to make things better. Joe, you got any final thoughts?
Yeah, I'm absolutely thrilled once again. I said it this time last year on our podcast, which is you have such a wonderful opportunity to steal your brother, cousin, mother's tablet this Christmas and start playing around with it. You know, we can walk into Best Buy and drop a couple $100 with the best of them now and walk out of things that talk. It's never been a better time digitally to be a blind person. And as strange as that phrase is, it is amazing to me that things that I see that are complained about on Apple this or something of that matter, it just seems kind of funny because it's like, wow, these things are working, period. It's a shame that that's broken or that app got broken. But it's still amazing to me that we have so much more available to us now than we did before. And if you're on all of these platforms, it can be very much overwhelming to keep up with the Joneses and to be aware of all of this stuff. So for those of you who live in multiple operating systems or live on multiple screen readers, you know now that you really got to have a lot to play with and a lot of time and a lot of effort to go out and make all that work. But if you do, it is very rewarding. It is amazing what's out there.
And Mike, we'll close with you. Any final words you want to say?
I, of course, want to ditto everything you said on the community stuff. But besides that, I want to point out, I think that the emergence of these platforms makes for great opportunity for entrepreneurial opportunities here for blind folks, not only to write software, be a part of this ecosystem, write apps for the store, but also train people, you know, teach other people, you know, pass the baton, help people understand how to use this stuff. You know, even walking into these stores, to an Apple store or to a Microsoft store and saying, can I give a talk on Saturday afternoon, or can I work with your team to maybe explain accessibility a little bit better, and maybe let's have a get together here and get some other blind people to start learning about the accessibility. Become an evangelist for these people. Really start to embrace the opportunity that's been put before us as a community. You know, for years and years, we've griped and complained that we didn't have our own destiny in our own hands. We had VR telling us what we could and couldn't do. We had people saying that here's an opportunity, people. It's a wide open road ahead of us. You know, and by simply thinking outside the box and saying, you know, I want to make this a world that I can live in. And I'm going to advocate through education. I'm going to advocate through self-promotion. And not by being angry. Remember, we deal with a heck of a lot more ignorance in the world than we do stupidity. And as I've said many, many times before, I got a cure for ignorance. Don't got a cure for stupid, though. You know, there's nothing that I can do about stupidity. But ignorance, when somebody doesn't truly know how I do things, even if they're the manufacturer of that thing, then let's just go in there and teach them. Don't get angry. You know, go out there and be a voice of reason, be a voice of education, and hey, make some money at it too. You know, try and get out there and teach people. Try and get out there and do seminars and make products. So embrace these platforms. I think it's a great opportunity for us as a community. And I'd love to know what you guys think of these mobile podcasts. Are they exciting to you? Or are we wasting our time? How do you feel? Send us an email. send us an iReport, write comments, do whatever it is that you got to do, good, bad, or otherwise. We'd love to hear from you.
Well, I think that's going to wrap it for this edition of our mobile devices series. And I really believe it's going to be a series because I think people are going to say, hey, give us more of this. We definitely want to hear from you. That's kind of been a theme through this entire podcast is dialogue with the developers and among the blind community. And of course, dialogue with us here at Serotech and the Serotalk Podcast Network. Patrick's going to tell you how to get a hold of us one more time, just in case you need that information. Until next time, have a great week, everyone.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.